Bailey and Hardy, Ultrasound Assistant, is proudly sponsored by Protein Rebel. Have you ever had super twitchy legs, after a long run where you can't get to sleep and they're just like twitchy, twitchy, twitchy? I have. And the only thing that has ever sorted them out is this Protein Rebel Power Up Seawater Magnesium. All you need to do is take 1 teaspoon of Power Up every evening, mix with water or juice, and it helps to improve your sleep, it honestly does, reduce restless and twitchy legs, and power up your body ready for your next run. Protein Rebel are a UK-based company who provide natural nutrition for runners, and their products include marine collagen, which I've also tried, which is amazing, this magnesium, which is amazing, a vegan protein powder, and award-winning maple syrup gels. And they have been kind enough to gift me a bundle to give to you, dear listener. One lucky listener will win a bundle in September 2024. And that bundle includes a tin of Accelerate vegan protein powder, a tin of Run Easy marine collagen, a tin of Power Up seawater magnesium, and 9 of these delightful Maple Ignite energy gels. All you need to do, head to Instagram, go to our link tree, enter the competition. The link is in the link tree. Put your email in, Bob's your uncle, but this will only work in September 2024. I love Protein Rebel. I really, really do. They sent me stuff free to try, and then I started buying it. And you can buy it too, using a discount code, which is also in our bio on Instagram. You'll get 15% off. So head over to Instagram at Ultrasound System Pod, fill in the form, enter the competition, get your discount code. And remember, listener, this is a grown-up podcast for grown-up people with some very immature, silly themes and lots of swearing. So if you're in the car on the school run, I'd advise you fucking switch it off now. All the best. Welcome to the Bailey and Harding Ultrasound System Legends Special. They're all special, the Legends. Our Legends episodes are episodes where we interview and talk to people who we believe to be legends of the sport, but they might not be people that you've heard of. So we've had Alan Bateson, we've had Hannah Rickman, we've had some lad called Damien Hall. You've heard of him, but we were desperate. And today I've got someone that I absolutely love, a man who brings up joy into every room or field that he walks into. Darren Evans is a co-founder of the Green Runners. He has also founded Pair Ups, who are the company that help you to elongate the life of your shoes. He's a race director. He's a runner. He also acted as head of crew for Dan Lawson on his recent Three Peaks record. So I want to talk to him about all those things. Welcome to the podcast, Darren.
Morning, Ali. How are you?
I'm good. I was hoping you were going to give me a wahoo.
Normally say that to the end.
It's so loud that you can't actually hear it. It's like, it's only dogs can hear it. Like, you need to step away from your computer when you do the wahoo.
Okay.
Very loud. How are you doing? Whereabouts the world are you? How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm in Seaford in East Sussex, in between Brighton and Eastbourne. The sun is shining, the sea is calm, it's a beautiful day. So yeah, hoping for a really good day, starting it off really nicely, talking to you, and then meeting Dan and Michael Doughty, founder of High Low Athletics, down for a sauna at 11. So yeah, a beautiful day today.
What a delight. Absolute delight.
Yes.
Michael Doughty's doing some really interesting stuff with shoes, isn't he?
100%, yeah.
What's he doing?
He's such a lovely guy. He's an ex-professional footballer, had enough of being told what to wear, like Nike and all this sort of stuff. He wanted to kind of Patagonia Nike, mm-hmm. So he came up with Hilo, and he's created this this trainer called Impact, which is 65% natural material, which is amazing. So yeah, he's a really lovely guy as well. He just gets it. So yeah.
So tell me about how you got involved with the Green Runners. Like, you told me once that you used to be a butcher. Is that true?
Yeah, when I left school, I became a butcher.
It's like the opposite of what people think a founding member of the Green Runners would do.
Yeah, I've been on a bit of a journey, if I'm honest. So, I left school, joined the YTS scheme, didn't do, that good at school. The youth training scheme, which I guess is the kind of the old sort of, what do they call it when you go into to work? And
I know what you mean. God, we're both old, aren't we? We're both the youth scheme. Yeah. It's a scheme. Yeah, there was a scheme back in the day, everybody.
There was a scheme, yeah. And you used to get absolutely pennies for doing crazy hours. And I worked at a local butcher's with a view to become a Dewhurst butcher. Now, for some people that are a lot older than you, Ali, will
Oh no, I
remember.
know what Dewhurst Butcher is. There used to
Dewhurst,
be one
yeah.
where I lived. Yeah, and it
Oh,
was like,
right,
oh,
sorry.
we're going to the butcher.
The butcher,
Yeah, the Dewhurst Butchers are the John Deere of butchers. The people that
yeah.
know about
100%.
tractors will know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, 100%. So that was me. I fell out of school into butchery. And then a couple of years later, I was 17 because I left school at 15 and a half because I'm born in August. So one of those youngest kids in the
You're the
school.
same as me. We're the same. I'm August too, so I came out and I went to university. I basically left to go to university when I was 17.
Yeah, spot on. Yeah. So fell out of school, fell into butchery, then a company called Asda opened up in High Wycombe where I kind of grew up. And yeah, I became a butcher for Asda and I stayed with them for 36 years,
Wow.
worked my way up to senior management and running £1 million plus stores, which was very stressful and yeah, but good financially.
Can you go into an Asda now without feeling like you've got PTSD?
I don't go, yeah, 100%. I don't go into Asda. I literally don't. Even though I've got a 10% discount card for life because of my service, I don't go into an Asda store. So
I feel like not just going in there and going to the meat counter and being like, see that,
yeah,
mate.
I get serious flashbacks. In fact, I can't enjoy Christmas or Easter purely because it was like if you imagine doing the Arc of Attrition every Christmas, like that's what retail
I
is.
think that's more enjoyable. I think that's way more enjoyable than retail at Christmas, which is awful. Having worked in retail at Christmas, no thank you.
It was crazy. So working stupid hours. I mean, it's good ultra training because you're just on your feet all the time for 15 hours a day for 4 or 5 days. So that was kind of me. And then I had an accident. I was into mountain biking. I used to run, but heavily into mountain biking. And when I was 49, I came off my mountain bike headfirst in the farmer's field and fractured my T3, 4, and 5, which is your thoracic sort of part of your spine. So that kind of gave me a bit of an epiphany. I thought, right, life's too short. I wasn't enjoying Asda. It was like the waste and all of this. I mean, I was getting into trouble for giving staff, produce that was perfectly all right, but because it had gone one day past its best before date, like I was giving it to people because I hated the waste. And so I guess it all kind of stemmed from there. And, technology was coming in, and I just got totally pissed off with retail. So I needed an exit plan. The accident was the kind of jolt that I needed. And then yeah, I retired at 54, which was 4 years ago. So not knowing what the hell I was going to do.
Listen, now you can't see Darren, but he looks like he's about 38. Whatever it is he's doing, we all need to do it. I think it's that sniffing that glue he uses for the shoes, something like that. Anyway, because he looks fucking amazing.
Yeah,
So,
maybe.
was it? It was. Did it kind of creep up on you, this thing about the waste and like it must? I think when you work in retail, there is that realization that you're in one shop and it's massive and there's loads of fucking choice. And there's, I do understand that supermarkets know exactly how much to buy because they know what they're going to sell. But at the same time, there's a fuck ton of waste, especially the fresh stuff, right? Everybody likes a buffet bar. And so was it that, or was there something else that kind of woke you up when it came to the there is another way of doing this type
No,
narrative?
it was mainly that. It was the horrendous waste. And then, in the early days, it wasn't so bad, because it was just normal retail. We weren't open 24 hours a day. We weren't open Sundays. It was traditional sort of shopping Friday nights. People weren't into this overconsumption. The range wasn't that great. So, and then suddenly in the sort of 90s, early 2000s, it just exploded and it was just ridiculous. And then all that generated loads of waste and extra pressure on people. And so, yeah, I just got disenfranchised with it. And the amount, not just the food waste, but the packaging waste was just horrendous. So, I then started thinking where is all this going? And then I started seeing things reduce in size, but the price was going up, and that got me into you know, a whole other subject, which, you know, the history of money and inflation and what that does to our money and stuff. And that whole narrative around, you know, you have to go to school, go to college, get a really good job, work there, pay you a pension, and then retire at 65. I just thought it was all a load of bollocks. And I kind of, yeah, just realised that this isn't what I wanted to do until I was 65. So, that kind of got me into the whole waste thing. But I didn't really understand it fully until I left and met a lady called Claire Sumners. She ran Plastic Free Seafood, which is, I live in Seaford, and she did beach cleans. And I met her at a sustainability fair 5 years ago, and she had a real impact on me. So I started going down and doing litter picks with them on the beach and understand talking to people and really understood what the impact of plastic, especially plastic waste, was in the sea. That kind of opened my eyes a little bit, and that's kind of put me on a road to what I wanted to do. So yeah, that was kind of it. And then I left Asda 4 years ago. I wanted to raise some money. I didn't want people buying me stuff that I didn't need. So I did it for a charity. And my wife, Jane, knows a lady called Fleur, who's the founder of Wolo, with her husband, Justin. And they're a cancer charity called it's Wolo, We Only Live Once. And they were affected by cancer, so they created this charity. So I did this crazy thing where I thought, right, I'll cycle around all the stores that I managed and run. So I did an 85-mile run and an 85-mile bike ride and a 30-mile run on a day, running all the stores and cycling between all the stores that I'd been a manager of. And
they must have thought you were fucking mental.
Yeah, yeah.
Because most people just take the clock and go home.
Yeah, exactly that. I mean, yeah, it was really funny, actually, because Fleur, bless her, she said, we need to call it something. And she came up with this great name. It was called Asda La Vista Baby.
I love it. Fleur can fucking stay. She's got a job with me.
Yeah, that was kind of it. So I literally put it out there, and it just having that name, so we raised quite a lot of money. It was lovely. And then it came to 30th of July 4 years ago, and then suddenly I was out of a job and I didn't know what I was going to do. So that's kind of, how my journey started.
So how did you get involved with the Green Runners? Did you start running after the accident?
So I used running as a way, and also I didn't want to get back on the bike. So I used running as a way of getting fit again. And I started writing because I'd made the decision that I wanted to leave Asda. For some reason, I had this capacity then to be a bit more creative. I've always kind of done art and stuff. And so I started writing about running and then my kind of meeting with Claire, I started writing about the environment and stuff and the impact of plastic waste. And then I kind of fell into seeing Dan Lawson, this guy called Dan Lawson, who is a local guy.
Ah, the Seaford Goblin, you mean? The tiny little brown man with no top who runs Shoreham everywhere.
Shoreham Goblin, yes.
Yeah, Shoreham Goblin, that's
it. Shoreham Goblin. And then I saw that he was doing this crazy run between Land's End and John O'Groats. So I followed it, dot watching and watching bits on socials. And I wrote an ode about it as he was doing it. And then I sent it to him through socials. And he messaged me back and said, that made me cry. Thank you so much. And I found out, having known Dan now, that it doesn't take a lot to make him cry.
I mean, he was probably on mushrooms or running, and then he just cries, didn't he? We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But I know he's Shoreham, so he's only down the road, and I checked out what they were doing with Rerun Him and Charlotte, and that kind of intrigued me with the whole waste stuff in running. So I went and met him and Charlotte at Rerun, And I had an old pair of G270s, like Innovate, like the, you know, the green, the first ones that
The
came
frog
out.
shoes,
Yeah,
yeah.
the frog boots, yeah.
Give
So,
it a real name.
yeah. And I had holes in them. And he said, "Oh, I can repair them for you." So we spent half an hour just repairing them. And I carried on using them for ages. And I said, "Dan, we need to do something with this." Like, that kind of led to pair-ups. But I, having wrote the ode about Dan's and the jog, and then having that connection, he was in a WhatsApp group with Damien Hall called Runners for XR, and I ended up writing a ode about the COP26, basically about our world leaders need to do more. And I sent it to Dan and said, "What do you think of this?" He sent it to Damien. Damien said, "Yeah, this is great." Invited me onto the WhatsApp group. And then we got runners to recite the ode in readiness for COP26 in Glasgow. And then that, yeah, that was it. And so I was invited into this group, and you know, Jasmine Paris and yeah, Charlie Harper, like loads of you know amazing people that I didn't really know who they were, you know. So I didn't have this kind of complex, you know, like they were just runners to me. So yeah, and then we put the video together, and then we got so pissed off with COP26 and the outcome that in the February afterwards, we had a Zoom call very similar to this. There were eight or nine of us on the call, and we just said, "Should we form a group?" So we had a bit of a debate. AJ said, "Should we call it the Green Runners?"
God,
I went on the
AJ
call.
must have been like 12 at the time.
Yeah, he's a young pup, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a baby.
Yeah. So yeah, he said, "Should we call it the Green Runners?" And I went on to GoDaddy, found the website host name. It hadn't gone, so we ordered it, and yeah, basically we set up the Green Runners from there, and it's been a crazy journey since then.
So the Green Runners has now got almost 3,000 members, I think, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's pushing on that way.
Yeah.
It's yeah, something like 12,000 followers on Instagram. We've only been going 2 years. We launched on World Earth Day 2022, and yeah, it's been a crazy journey.
What do
Yeah.
you think the so I'm a Green Runner, obviously I know what this is all about, but for the people that don't know what the Green Runners are, who are they? What's the point for Green Runners? And also, how do people join? Because actually joining, for me, joining made a massive difference because of the way that you ask people to join. Like there is a method in your madness and it actually fucking works. So do you want to just explain a little bit about what it is, how it works?
Yeah, so it's just a community of people, runners that care about their environment, local community, and their impact. So yeah, we wanted to keep it as simple as possible. So we came up with basically to join. It used to cost £2.50 to join, which is now £5. But
Back in
then
the day,
in
Darren,
the day,
it's a
back in
different
the day,
time. Different,
yeah,
it's like Asda.
100%.
Is it dynamic pricing
Yeah,
on
yeah.
DCMB?
We're not quite dynamic, but there is tier pricing. Yeah, and I had a conversation about yeah they were using it on the Oasis tickets.
Yeah, dynamic pricing
Yeah,
is basically like, oh, you want it, right? Okay, it's gonna be 18 times more than you was
spot on.
originally. Yeah.
Yeah, now we it's basic £5, or you can donate as much as you want, and then you can get a Green Runners badge that we send out that is made on old race T-shirts. So we're really conscious that the impact that we have, we don't create something new, and we use something that's already existing. And all we ask is runners, or anyone, you don't even have to be a runner, is just to make a pledge under the four pillars. So we try to keep it really simple. So it's how you move, how you kit up, how you eat, and how you speak out. And we just ask you to make a pledge under those four pillars to make small changes, and that's what it's about. It's about, you know, making simple changes. So
So that's the bit for me that actually had an impact. And I will admit that when I first joined Green Runners, I joined it to be cool because I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. This is cool. Everyone's doing this. But then making those pledges, actually thinking about how you speak out, how you move, like makes a massive difference. And so it has actually made a huge difference to me when I think about, especially the amount of flights I take. I used to take a lot. Now I try and keep it to two a year. And it and that's not hardship. It actually makes life a bit more exciting and a bit more of an adventure because you're like, oh, if I want to go here, then how am I going to get there? And I think people think that it means that you have to become a vegan or you have to like fucking buy a green vehicle. But it's not about that, is it? It's about just making things a little bit better. And I think if we all make things a little bit better, you realize how easy it is to make things a little bit better. And it's not like sometimes I think people think we're asking people to take something away or miss out on something, whereas actually it's the complete opposite.
100%. Yeah, it's completely that. And you know, I still eat meat. When I joined the Green Runners, I got a bit of a complex about I shouldn't be eating meat. And actually, I should eat meat because I was a butcher. I mean, meat has been a major part of my life, all my working life, and more. And it only changed. And it actually wasn't the Green Runners that caused that. It was my son Alfie, 4 years ago, we were at the Christmas table, three lots of meat, and he said, I don't want to eat animals anymore, Daddy. And it was like, oh my God. Like, so he actually was the one who kind of made me cut down on meat. Mm-hmm. And then when we joined the Green Runners, or we founded the Green Runners, I thought, right, I want to go vegetarian and a more plant-based diet. But because meat had been, you know, had such major part of my life, to suddenly cut it out, I then started getting injured because I wasn't informed enough. I didn't know what the right stuff to eat.
You didn't realize now you had no protein going into your body at all.
Exactly that. So now I go to our local farm, Middle Farm, and you know, we buy grass fed and organic. So you know, me, I'm still on the journey, and I hope to become plant based in the future, but I'm not going to do a drastic change, which is the reason why the Green Runners have the pledges. It's about the small steps that you can make.
Exactly. And I'm exactly the same. Like, as much as I'd love to be plant-based and everything would be fucking great, I love eggs and cottage cheese. It's my main form of protein. And I know, like, that I can stop doing that. There are other forms of protein, but I've also got a woman like literally two doors down who's got chickens in the back garden, and that's where I get my fucking eggs from. And until they sort out their cottage cheese thing, the vegans, we're not talking about it. They have sorted out cheese though, because Cathedral City do an amazing plant-based cheese now, which is actually delicious. But you know, like, just replacing your milk with oat milk is simple as that. That's all you have to do. It's quite simple, but you don't even have to do that. It's like, how are you going to, it's the things like kit. So I think kit is a really, really important topic, because obviously I'm sponsored by Innovate, which is, you know, and I will continue to be sponsored by Innovate because I really like them as a brand. They've started Renovate now, which is, it's on the way. They're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but they are on the way to being better. And I think the work that the Green Runners are doing with Renovate, especially at the Village Green at the running show this year, is going to push that so that people can see, not only does it make it cheaper to take part in the sport, but you can buy this kit secondhand and there's nothing wrong with it. Like, absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's been fixed. It actually looks a lot cooler. Like, Damien's just had his bag fixed for Tour de Géant. And they've put these orange zips on. And I'm like, I want orange zips on my bag, because now it looks like a Patagonia bag. It's super cool. So do you want to just talk a little bit about the work that Pair Ups are doing with shoes? Because I think that the work that you do with Pair Ups is one of the greatest, like, problem-solving tools that we have at the moment for waste, when it comes to shoes. Because people just chuck their shoes where the uppers go, don't they? And they just don't need to.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, so under the pillars, my two big pillars that I have is how we kit up and how we speak out. So I use my writing of odes to raise awareness, but the kit is really important for me, being, you know, involved in plastic-free seafood early on and all that waste. So I then started to understand the massive impact. And talking with Dan and Charlotte, you know, with the work at ReRun, this is, I know they can't see it, but this is...
Oh, my God, it's such a good T-shirt.
ReRun top. So, I haven't bought any new kit apart from pants and socks, because I won't buy secondhand pants and socks. I haven't bought new
kit. Why not? Why should I do that?
Yeah, why not? We'll come on to the Three Peaks Challenge in a minute. But,
right.
that's one of the reasons why I want secondhand pants and socks. But having that contact with Dan and him repairing my trainers, I just thought it was a no-brainer. And And I probably got another couple of 100 miles out of those. I've still got them, you know,
Oh,
those
mate,
G270s.
some of the jobs that Julius has done on mine, I swear to God, I've got like 500, 600, 700 more miles out of them, even as dog walking shoes.
Exactly that. Yeah. So I thought, how can I make this accessible for normal runners to be able to, you know, repair their kit without, you know, buying whole reels of KT tape and all of that. So we kind of perfected. So in the early days, we used a bit of cardboard to kind of put the patch down. So then I tried loads of different things, and then we had a Dorsha stone, which is a jade stone muscle scraper, basically. So it can be reused as a muscle scraper because we were conscious that we didn't want to create any more waste. The only thing with that is to get them, they have to come from China. So I then managed to get a company to do the tool out of wood locally with CNC machines and stuff like that. So you can still get the Guasha stone as the option because it can be reusable and, you know, still get a load of requests for the Guasha stone. But the whole point is that we try and get runners to take care of their own kit, and that is it. And just creating this little kind of, I call it the puncture repair kit for trainers. You know, and anytime you get a rip, I mean, you can have brand new pairs of trainers hit a rock or a bit of barbed wire, and you've got a tear. And it, all it does, it stops that from getting any worse and just extends that life a lot longer, especially now as the sole technology is so good. You know, the uppers, we kind of get the trade-off between weight and, you know, speed, and I guess that will never change. However, yeah, we've kind of created this kit where you can extend the trainer life for a lot longer.
So if you had to describe how to fix a hole in your shoes on a podcast, how would you describe it? Because I think people think it's too hard. I think people think it's too difficult, but it's not.
Yeah, it's not. It's so simple. Visit pairops.co.uk. The process is on .co.uk. Yeah, the process is on there. It's just getting the glue is the key component. So it's flexible waterproof glue. All you need is a bit of glue, some KT tape. That's basically it. You just cut it to size, and it's so simple. It is so simple to use. I mean, yeah, it.
And it looks fucking cool. Let's face it, it does look cool because you can cut them into all sorts of weird shapes. I've got leopard print KT tape.
You inspired me to get a leopard print, and we've actually had people ordering the pink leopard
Of
print.
course, because it looks cool. Like I will buy a whole reel of KT tape if it's got a good print on it, just because I'm like, not if my shoes get holes in, I'm going to use this.
That's
So
fine.
and they look really cool. I think
Yeah.
I really like that, like slightly customized look on my trainers. And people said to me about my Innovate ones, oh wow, they're cool, where'd you get those? And I'm like, I think they thought I bought them like that, but I
Right
didn't.
here. When we get loads of people on who share their share your pair ups, and they share it on the socials, and some of them are amazing. You know, like paw prints on if they do canny cross, it's so good.
Julius has done my logo is a mountain with a lightning bolt coming through it. He's actually done a pair of rock lights with the mountain with a pink lightning bolt going down them.
Amazing.
Oh my God, I love them. I love them. They're for best, those shoes. I'm gonna wear those when I do my winter spine because I'm actually saving them because I love them so much.
Yeah,
But there's
yeah,
so
yeah.
much cool stuff you can do. And like you say, you know, the uppers would always go now before the bottoms do. And I just would encourage everybody, especially for something like Christmas or birthdays, a little gift of just a pair ups kit to send to somebody is a brilliant little gift.
Yes.
And as a little ad, Darren and I think Julius is going to come help you as well. We'll be at the running show this year, so they'll be able to show you. If you want to bring your trainers, they can show you how to do it. So it's a really easy thing to do and an amazing thing to do. And I honestly think everybody should know about it. Everybody should share it because it is the future. So many people are chucking shoes away for no fucking good reason. Still, I was at the UK Barclay Marathons on Friday, and they had Jog On there, and they had a crate, a big thing for old shoes. There was only 100 runners, and it was fucking full.
Yeah, I mean, I work closely with Tony. I've been over to Tony's place 3 times because for the Rathfinny Run, one of the races that I organise, we use pre-loved trainer laces washed in vinegar instead of new ribbon, you know, on slate metals. So I Tony's got a plethora of obviously trainer laces because, and it's just the thing about, you know, the education. I don't want to get all serious and stuff, but the education piece is so important. So, you know, runners, and it's one of the reasons that Dan and Charlotte, I think, gave up, you know, doing rerun, is because it also, it almost makes runners feel less guilty if they give it to someone.
100%.
Yeah. And that's not what it's about. It's, you know, runners, take ownership for your kit. Don't just pass it on to anyone just thinking that they're going to solve the issue. You know, be responsible consumers and look after your kit for as long as you can. Because I was at the National Running Show. I saw Tony there the first year when you invited us on as part of the Bad Boy Running podcast a couple of Januaries ago. And, you know, Tony was there with his crates and stuff. And the amount of trainers that were going in there that were perfectly okay.
I was at Renovate the other day and I was in the bin at Renovate pulling out stuff and I was like, this will fit me. It's really nice. Like they're like hiking shoes that people have never fucking worn. Exactly. And it's like, don't treat people like Charlotte and Dan and Tony as bins. They're not a fucking bin. They're not. And don't think that you putting that in there is suddenly going to give you some environmental points, because it just makes you a twat. Look after your fucking kit. It's a last resort, isn't it?
100%. It's a last resort when they're end of life. And I love what Tony's doing, because his mission is to take 1 million pairs of trainers out of landfill. And, you know, he's currently got the best option of disposing of end-of-life trainers. And also the work that he does with the charities that he sends those trainers to is great. But we need, you know, there's a fear that he could end up like Rerun and be overwhelmed by...
Well, Rerun became overrun, didn't they? Because 100%. They were fucking being treated like a charity shop, but a bad one. And people just think throwing T-shirts at them is going to make them more environmental, but it doesn't. Honestly, it just makes you a fucking bell end. Don't do it. Like, stop doing it.
Yeah.
It's and looking after your kit, I think, especially with trainers, people are like, oh, well, you know, these aren't very well made because they're getting holes in. If you don't wash your trainers after you've been out in a bog, the microbes from the bog will eat at the top of your trainers. Like, you've got to clean your kit. And what I find really funny is people will look after things like their car or their computer or even their dog, but they won't look after their shoes. And it's like, you've paid £150 for them.
Like, they're cheap.
No, they're there to serve you for a long, long time. If you don't look after them, if you're running a lot on trails, mine always go in the same place because I run a lot on trails and they get caught on rocks, they get scuffed and they get bog all over them. And two or 3 hours running with little tiny bits of rock in is going to make holes in them. So I wash them whenever I get home. It's really, really important. And it's the same with your kit, you know, like you don't have, when you go out running during the week, you don't have to wash your kit every single time you fucking use it. I have the same T-shirt for 4 days because the only person that can smell me is me. So don't fucking wash it every fucking day. You don't need to. It's little bits like that. That's part of the Green Runners stuff. So I think it's really important. And it should become a badge of honour to have those patches on your shoes and to have your patches on your T-shirt. And to, like, I think it's, and one of the things I really like about kit is the story behind it. You know, this is the T-shirt I wore for this, or these are the shoes I wore for this. I've still got the shoes I wore when I ran across that lake in Mongolia. I haven't worn them. They're Ultra. I wouldn't wear them. I'm Innovate. But I've got them because they're part of the story. And I wear them out dog walks. So, you know, I think it's really important that people. That you can't just be like, oh, I'll just give it to charity, or I'll just give it to Rerun, or I'll just give it to Tony, because that doesn't make you clean. You can't then go and buy a new pair. It's like giving away a fucking puppy and going and buying a new puppy.
And if there's any runners out there that don't agree with what I've said or what you've just said, watch a little film called No Lost Shoes. It's amazing. It's by a guy called Max Romey. It really does emphasize the impact that trainers have on the environment and the world. So
I'll put that in the show notes. Amazing. Right, let's talk about Dan Lawson.
Yes, so Dan,
I kind of want to get him on the podcast, but I think it would just go off on such tangents that I just don't even know if I'll be able to cope with it, to be honest. So tell us about, I think you've crewed him before, haven't you? What was the plan?
What was the plan? So it all started off with a conversation around carbon crewing and the impact of crews on the environment, because, you know, we can all do our bit around how we travel, how we move around, you know, catching trains to races, you know, taking fewer flights, et cetera, et cetera. So we can do that as runners, but you know, if you've got crews following you along on these long distance runs, the impact that crews can have as well. And it's kind of an untalked about issue. So me and Damien, we had this conversation late last year around the impact of carbon crewing. And so, you know, even to the point where we said, do you ever think race directors will ban crews and just have stations?
I know James Elson might ban crews, but it's not because of carbon crewing. It's just because they fucking park up devils so I can don't listen to him. Yeah, that's it.
Exactly that, yeah. But it, funny you mentioned James. So James kind of helped us instigate this. So on the South Downs Way 100s, we reached... So I had a chat with Dan about it, see if we could do it carbon-free. So crewing, but on mountain bikes. Mm-hmm. So we'd start at Winchester, catch a train down there, go to Winchester, set off, and then try and stay ahead of Dan to meet him at the crew points. So we did that, and it worked. And not only did it work, but he recorded the second fastest time for the South Downs Way 100 at, you know, 51 years old.
He won, and the only reason he won was because of your crewing. That you're allowed to say that you're allowed.
He's just, yeah, honestly, he blew us all away. It was,
it was amazing.
It was a couple of times where my heart was pounding a little bit to see whether I could actually be in, you know, stay in front of him. But that kind of started it all off, really. And then we realised actually that not every race or not every run can be carbon crew free.
No, man, like if you think about something like the Arc, you've 100%. Got a problem there, haven't you? Because with the South Downs, you've got lots of in-points. Or you could even 100%. Ride your fucking bike on the South Downs way. It's like mountain bike territory. Yeah.
Although
but somewhere like that,
yeah,
it's like...
Although James did say that we weren't allowed to use we had to use the same route as a car.
Really? Oh, that's actually good. Because if everybody does that, there'll be a bit of a problem, won't there?
A real issue. So we were having to use road networks to then come back up onto the South Downs. But you're right, for the Arc of Attrition, it wouldn't work. Okay. And then for the Three Peaks, after we'd done the South Downs Way 100, Dan said, I'm doing the Three Peaks. Would you help crew? So
just for people that don't understand what the Three Peaks are, we're not talking about the Yorkshire Three Peaks here, are we? What exactly does this world record entail?
Yeah, so it's running from Carnarvon. So you have to touch the sea in Carnarvon and then run up Snowdon, then run to Scarfell Pike, run up Scarfell Pike, then run to Ben Nevis, do Ben Nevis, and then end up in Fort William in Loch Linney, and you have to either put your hands or your feet in the lock to finish. And that records. And the record has stood for 44 years. And it was 5 days, 23 hours and 37 minutes. And Dan wanted to try and do it in sub 5 days.
Everybody, Dan is a 50-year-old granddad.
I got improved by a 58-year-old granddad.
Yeah, brilliant. Look at these two old gits.
Yeah.
Out for a few days out together.
we started to kind of plan it. So, I met them at Penny Pass. So Damien started with Dan at Carnarvon. They did Snowdon. I met them at Penny Pass.
Yeah, because you can't really ride your bike over like Traverse, really, yeah. Can you? You can't really get up there.
I wasn't doing the peaks. My role was to protect Dan from traffic because Robbie had set the shortest route possible, obviously, which meant running along dual carriageways and places where there wasn't a lot of space. My job was to kind of protect Dan on the narrower roads or the dual carriageways, but also when we got to places like sort of Preston, Glasgow, is going ahead. So we weren't wasting time thinking, right, do we need to go this way? So going ahead to the next junction, he could see me, so he didn't have to think about, you know, where we were going. So that was my role. And Jane and Alfie, so Jane's my wife and Alfie's my youngest son, they were kind of my crew in our camper van, and Charlotte and Dan's family were in their van Yeah, so they were kind of our crew, but my role was to kind of protect Dan and just be some moral support. So yeah, it was crazy. Honestly, Ali, it was crazy. The first target for the first day was to do 230K in one go. Carnarvon to a place called Garstang. And it was unbelievable. Yeah, so but what an adventure. Yeah, I didn't really like it. For me personally as well, it was a massive sense of adventure. But also, we're in the process of doing up a Mercedes Sprinter because we're going to travel in February next year. So we're renting our house out for 2 years. We're going off van life. And Jane had never been to Scotland, the furthest up England. She'd been to St. Pete District. So, and also Alfie hadn't, you know, so for them to experience those sort of 5 days by seeing Wales, the Lake District, and Scotland.
Don't forget the highlights of Preston and Glasgow. I remember this from Run Britannia. I'll never forget Runcorn.
Glasgow was great, but Dumbarton was a completely different story. So apologies Dumbarton, but it wasn't
you see the greatest places in the UK and the worst.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember running through Runcorn down behind these houses and I had to jump over a toilet. Like a toilet was just thrown into the middle of the street and I was like, I have to climb over that now. And I got there was a trolley. It was all very exciting. And then there was a whole road where I was running with my friends Cara and Sarah, where every single man in a car had something to say to us. And I was like, wow, this is a good street. Brilliant. Yeah. What a place to be.
Yeah. It's very, very similar to Dumbarton. But then as you come out of Dumbarton, like you then hit sort of Loch Lomond and it was just amazing. And then you head up out, you know, into sort of Argyll and Bute. And it was just, and up there we had some biblical rain. I mean, the first 3 days were so hot. It was at one point, my phone on the bike, on the case in the bike, my phone overheated. It was that hot, you know, so I was having to take it out and get some and cool it down as we were going.
Yeah.
It was crazy, and how Dan, you know, got through those 3 days. It was just unbelievable. It ended up that I was never going to be doing the peaks ever. So I was.
Were you not tempted to like get off your bike and go up there with him? Like, is there not a temptation for you to be like, I want to do this as well. I want to say I've done it as well and do it with him.
No, not 100%. No. So. Damien, obviously, I've been up Snowdon before. I've been to like UTS a couple of times and stuff. But yeah, Damien was doing Snowdon and then James Elson did Scarfell. So when we got to Scarfell or just past sort of, is it Grasmere?
Yeah.
That place. We stopped at a car park and we found a campsite and then James took Dan up because, you know, James knows Scarfell right the back of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
So, which was really good. And then they got back at about 11 o'clock that night. And then we were back up at 4 o'clock in the morning to then do the long haul kind of up to Ben Nevis.
Mm-hmm.
It's never going to be doing the peaks. But when we got to Ben Nevis, it was like 11:15 at night. I ended up going up.
Didn't it get a bit sketchy up there?
It got a bit sketchy, yeah. It was, it was crazy. So, you know, Robbie had set out the navigation on Komoot and, you know, we were singing, like, you know, Robbie's names, you know, in Robbie we trust, because the navigation was absolutely spot on. And so I was leading up Ben Nevis, having never been up there before.
Oh, my Christ. I'm like, because this is the thing, right? I was like, why is there not a fucking mountain leader who knows Ben Nevis, like the back of their hand to meet him at the bottom of fucking Ben Nevis?
Yeah.
That was my problem, because it was nighttime and it was
nighttime.
Weather.
Yeah.
It was bad weather.
It was bad weather, yeah. So we had biblical rain prior to that. And it was really lovely because Jen Scottney and Marcus Scottney, they helped Dan through the Devil's Staircase.
Oh, yeah, but they stayed at the bottom of fucking Ben Nevis, didn't they? Clever Trevor's. She's like, I've got a book coming out, mate. I can't afford to die up there. What's shit to do? Marcus is like, I've got to get home now. See
yeah,
you
that's right. Spot on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they handed over at the youth hostel, and then yeah, we literally got changed, or Dan got changed, and then we set off. So I was still using the Komoot app in my hand, my right hand. So there was me, Dan, a guy called Mike who joined us at Glasgow. He ran through Glasgow with us, and then came back for Ben Nevis. And we had Kaz and Duncan. So there were five of us. And I was using the Komoot app to go up. And yeah, we got up sort of, I don't know, two-thirds of the way up, and then the fog hit, and then the cold starts to hit, and then it gets windier as you get to the top. And then as we just get to the peak at the top, just off the path, the Komoot navigation stops.
Oh, God.
So it has stopped about 120 metres from the cairn where you have to get to. And I'm saying to Dan, Dan, we're here, we've done it. Right, let's get back down. And
nah.
he's going, no, we need to find the cairn. And I said, well, the navigation stopped. So anyway, it's six foot of visibility. The wind chill factor, it's something like -3, 39 mile an hour wind.
There's some fucking death drops on Ben Nevis.
Yeah,
there are literal death drops. Like, you go off the edge, you're off the edge. There's no grabbing onto anything.
No, exactly. And Dan said, you know, be wary. On the left, there's like two massive drops. Anyway,
I'm glad that Dan's got his fucking wits about him after four and a half days being awake.
Honestly, he was there. So, yeah, we were trying to find it. And anyway, we found it. So Kaz managed to find it. She went slightly ahead. She'd been up there before. And there was a high-vis jacket on it that kind of caught a torch. So we went there, took the photo. Then we had to try and find the path back. Then we found the path, and then I led them down. And then we kind of realised that we had an hour and 6 minutes to do 9.5K.
Fucking hell.
To get to break the 5 days. So once we cleared the fog, almost to the point, just before the waterfall, where you cross over the waterfall, we said, right, we need to pick up the pace, because at that time we were doing like 21-minute Ks going up and about 17-minute Ks coming down. So, I mean, Dan, you know, he's been on his feet for, you know, 5 days, put 420-odd miles in his legs. We had 11.5 hours sleep all of that week. And we just said, right, we need to go for it. So we were literally running down, or what felt like we were running really fast down, but actually we weren't. We were kind of hitting like 8-9 minute Ks, but it was faster than what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to the bottom, and then it kind of eased off, and then we literally had to get to Fort William, which was about 4.5K, and we knew we had time then. And we got there at 4:46, and yeah, we needed to be there before 5 o'clock. So we beat the records, yeah, by just under 24 hours, and his personal challenge of getting there under 5 days, and the emotion just came out. It was...
I mean, the emotion was coming out every time you fucking saw someone, wasn't it? Tears
all the time. It was like... There were some really big... As you know, like with ultra running, you get some big highs and you get some big lows all through the journey. But that final moment will stay with me for absolute ever.
The photo of him and Charlotte is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's stunning. Absolutely stunning.
Yeah, you should go and have a look on his Instagram, everyone, because it is a really beautiful picture. Did Dave take that?
I think Dave, yeah, because Dave was there. Dave joined us, and he took a couple of shots at Glen when we were passing Glencoe as well. And he was at Scarfell. We saw him
he's everywhere, Dave McFarlane. He
was doing some other filming for
He just pops out from behind the cairn. You're like,
Dave's lovely. And if you haven't seen Breaking 10, which is Dan's Land's End to John O'Groats film, that Dave McFarlane put together. It is just so beautiful.
It is beautiful. But the thing is about Dan is, and the thing about this whole, that whole 5 days, it's, in my opinion, how it should be done. It's honest, it's gritty, it's real. There is no, like, big sponsorship. He's running along, like, as someone should. He's got no fucking top on. He's watched his stuff down his pants. He's got a stupid bucket hat on. He is eating those ridiculous milk bottle sweets and drinking Lucozade, like, when he can. There's none of this zhuzh and none of this, like, this has been in the planning for 4.5 years. We've got 19 vehicles, 17 crew. We've got a physio. We've got this. We've got that. It's like, it's just very pure and very honest. And all of the social media stuff that Charlotte was putting up was very honest. Dan shit himself in the van. Dan's fucking in floods of tears. Dan's laying on the floor talking absolute nonsense. Dan's now eating milk bottle sweets off the floor. Dan's puppy is here. Like, it is such a joy. It was such a joy to watch.
It was such, you hit it on the head. It was just so honest, raw honest. It was amazing, and you know, there were times, you know, just little moments when we were running along a dual carriageway. I was at the back, and there was Kaz, Mike, and Dan, and we were running along the A82. I think it was from Dumbarton to Loch Lomond. And then the light was starting to fall, and it was scary. It was proper scary. You had all these kind of lorries and vans, like, running past. But when we got to the end, when we met the crew just before Loch Lomond coming off that dual carriageway, we all felt something, and we don't know what it was, but it was almost like something was lifting us. Protecting us. It was to the point where, honestly, there were moments where I don't know whether they call it, you know, the flow or whatever, but there was something surreal in that moment, and there were loads of moments where it was like that. It was bizarre.
So with you, what is it that you get out of that side of it? Because it's not the first time you've crewed him, is it? It's not the first time you've looked after him. And like, what do you get out of it? I find it fascinating when people will do that. And they're not doing it for any reason. It doesn't seem like they're doing it for any reason other than they fucking want to do it.
Do you know what? It all kind of stems back from when I kind of retired. And I was shitting myself when I decided to retire. I was on a six-figure salary. You know, I didn't have a plan. And I read a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of went back to that. And I just, when he said, do you want to do it? I said, yes. You know, I've only been up Snowdon. You know, I haven't done all these like crazy adventures. And I just thought, sod it. I'm just going to do it. And you know what? One thing, I mean, it gave me, there's so many things that it gave me personally, not only confidence as well. I mean, spending just the time with Dan. I mean, we're both West Ham supporters.
What the fuck are you talking about, you and him?
Oh, just shit. Like West Ham transfers mainly. My little boy is also West Ham. And it was just lovely little moments. I got a West Ham towel. And every time we'd meet them, we'd then get off because we really didn't stop. I mean, literally, it was a case of change shoes, have something to eat and go. Literally, that was it. There was no real time spent, and now drive past, and Alfie would have the West Ham flag, the West Ham towel coming out of the passenger window like a flag. And little moments like that, just, and we go, come on, you want it? And just little moments like that. It was, but one of the things. So my youngest daughter's a runner, Shannon, and I love, nothing brings me more joy than running with, like, family, like, yeah, you know,
it's a gift, isn't it? My sister's my niece Holly started running because my sister was a runner, and Holly actually once said to my sister, "Mom, the greatest gift you've given to me is running." And she only does 5-10 Ks, but it's changed her life, and it's given her this freedom and this confidence. And I think that is, for a parent to give that to a child, is an absolutely incredible gift.
Yeah, it's lovely, and I get so much joy out of it. And yeah, Alfie was he loved running, like. And then about seven, 8 years old, like he was well into it. And then he joined the football team and then he became a goalie and his running kind of took a back seat and we weren't running so much and he stopped doing junior park run and park run. And then seeing Dan do what he did and to be part of it, it's inspired him. And we've been out literally, like yesterday was the only day we didn't go out since we've been back. And he's been out every day and I've been running with him every day. And to just have that given back, that's everything for me. Mm-hmm. So not the experience was beautiful, but that end result is priceless.
And what are your plans going forward then? So I know you've got races that you've got, you're a race director as well. You're everything basically. You're the everyman. You're the poet, the race director, you're the crew. What's your plans going forward? What have you got coming up?
So as I mentioned, we're going on a massive adventure, which again gave us the confidence. So doing the Three Peaks has given us real confidence about that. We can do that. It's not no issues with that at all now, which is you always kind of question whether you're on the right track. That is the main goal. But I'm also a race director of the Raffini Run and the Longbridge 100 back at Ultra. So we've got that in January. So the winter one is in January, on January the 17th, the week before we go to the National Running Show. And the summer one is June the 24th. that's first year this year. It's a bloody hilly one. So, I mean...
What, the backyard or the other one?
But they're both... I love a hill.
Yeah, I know you do.
Yeah,
I've happened upon you in the middle of 100 milers at 3 o'clock in the fucking morning, breaching a hill. I'm like, who the hell is that? Oh, it's Darren shouting at me. Amazing.
Love a hill. So the Raffini Run is a 10.7k run through a beautiful vineyard in local. It's literally 3k away from my house. It's a beautiful vineyard. Check it out, Raffini. And then the Longbridge 100. I think it's in the top 12 hilliest backyards in the world last time we checked, but that's springing up all over the place. So that could be outdated by now. But it has 623 feet of elevation every loop of 4 miles. So it's the reason for that is it's the equivalent of doing the 100 South Downs Way with the same elevation.
Whoa, that is tasty.
Yes, tasty. And that's the reason. So not only do I love the backyard concept around the community of, you know, runners starting at the same time every hour, and they build that real sort of rapport with each other, but I wanted my backyard to represent the South Downs Way 100, because obviously I live on the South Downs Way. Mm-hmm. So any runner who wanted to try out in a safe environment in loops, and I know you're not keen on the backyard format.
I fucking hate it. I don't like being told what to do. So for me, it's a no-no, because you're being told what to do every hour on the hour. And it's like, I don't want to. It's like, you're out then. Oh, okay.
Yeah. There is that element, but it is great for, you know, for any new run. And what we found is, as well, especially the summer, some newbie runners that were really testing distance for the first time were running with some really serious runners. So they learn about race admin and, you know, those are different tips and stuff. So
it gives you that opportunity to talk to people, because you're 100%. Not running fast. You're all basically trying to run at the same fucking pace. It's a real leveler, isn't it? Because it's not really about how fast you can run. It's about how strategic you are.
100%. So, yeah, it's a really good concept for that. So when we go traveling, so we'll be going traveling, and I'll be coming back doing the races, and then we'll be going traveling again. So, and then I'm looking to do the Sussex Border Path FKT.
Nice.
So that's in the next couple of weeks, just choosing which day. We were going to do the 12th, which is on a Thursday, but that goes into Friday the 13th. And although I'm not that superstitious, I'm going to kind of, My gut's telling me just to swerve it.
Just swerve it.
So maybe the week before. But that's coming around soon. So that's 141 miles. That'd be quite a nice one. That's kind of it.
So if you want to meet Darren, and you should really want to meet him, because he is a man who has like sunshine glowing out his face all the time. we're going to be at the running show, aren't we? Having a nice time. We've got the Village Green at the running show, which you are all invited to. And I believe you can actually still get free tickets using the code Village Green. I say that now. I bet you won't be able to when you listen to this podcast. We're going to be there all weekend. Darren's going to be doing the pair ups things, bring your shoes along and learn how to fix them yourself. We're going to have Rerun there. We're going to have Pre-Loved there. We're going to have Dan's going to be there doing a talk. Dan Lawson's going to do a talk. We're going to get as much talking out of him as we can. We're going to have David Miller doing his Barclay stuff. We're going to have talks all over the weekend about sustainability, but also from people like Jasmine and Rini and me and Damien. Basically, you can come meet your heroes. Your heroes being Dan and Darren.
It's going to be amazing.
We'll just be mingling. So thank you so much, Darren. This has been really, really awesome. I'm going to put links to all your races into the show notes and the films and stuff that you mentioned as well. And I'm just really chuffed that you've come on and told people about what you're all about. Thank you.
Thank you, Ali. It's been lovely talking to you.